sitting there watching Instagram the other day, and I just recently saw Ben Hobson got the keys to his local city, and he's got his full-on pro car out there, and he's drifting around the streets of his hometown. And that kind of brought back those memories of watching the Gymkhana videos and Travis when he raced all around down in Annapolis and the streets of Long Beach. And I started to like really reminisce about that whole aspect and kind of how we don't see that as much anymore. We're not seeing the kind of like how we saw with older race cars where you were seeing them come out to car meets more, you know, you see these old school guys with for instance, the Shelby GT350 and you would see them down at your local Cars and Coffee. And these are full on streetable race cars. Like, let's be honest, it had no creature comforts. It was as noisy, as smelly, and as raw as it came. And these guys are sitting there getting up Sunday morning at 5 a.m., firing it up in their neighborhood and cruising down the road. And I feel like we're losing some of that. I feel like that rawness of the car culture is going away.
Maybe it depends on the region. There's a huge Cars and Coffee near me. I don't go every weekend, but when I have time, I'll head down just to check it out. There are some pretty unique rare vehicles that show up from time to time. A lot of times, though, they're trailered and then they're, you know, dropped off in the back and they kind of swung around. There are some that are driven as well. You know, there's been some cool stuff there. Like, I remember seeing an F40 there. That was kind of cool to see, you know, in person. There's a bunch of McLarens and stuff like that, too. It seems like nowadays, though, the most extreme vehicles that show up in terms of like not really being completely streetable, like kind of like on the verge of being almost impossible to drive, are some of the imports, because some of them are, you know, single turbo Supra, like, you know, slicks, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I think those have kind of taken over, at least in my area, in terms of like the rare ones you don't see often. When you do, everyone's like, whoa, this is crazy to see. But there are still some, you know, there's a few like old school ones that will come out that are, you know, rare or super unique. But I got to think, like, if you actually own one of those vehicles, even if you're, you know, a rich guy and this is one of your toys, it's such a risk, you know, especially at Cars and Coffee. I see these guys go like bumper to bumper pulling in, and then one wants to do, you know, hit it a little bit and give it a little bit of gas. I'm like, damn, just bumper damage is probably like, you know, in the tens of thousands.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So the question is, where do you draw that line? Like, where does the street car end and where the race car begins, in your opinion? Like, if you were to say, hey, I want a dedicated race car that I'm only going to use to go into the track, obviously we're talking full gut, no amenities. But where does that line start to blur if you take your street car and start to walk it to that line?
For me personally?
Yeah.
I would be looking at things like drivability, number one. And that includes not just like the car being able to idle and like be able to, you know, be manageable on the street, but also your clutch. You got like this super high horsepower setup and you got a crazy clutch, it's going to get old quick. You know what I mean?
Fully agree.
If you've got a race bucket and a back like mine that doesn't like to cooperate, it's not the best thing in the world. I definitely, for me personally, I would not drive a car with a full cage on the street ever. That's just my thing. I would never do that. And I see it all the time. And it just, what I see it, I just, man.
I mean, just real quick from a safety aspect, in case some of you guys don't know, we usually frown upon having a fully caged street car because there's no head protection.
Yeah. Well, they'll put a pad, but
yeah, a pool noodle's really going to stop you in 110 mile per hour crashes.
It's not gonna help
yeah,
much.
No.
Yeah.
So we usually try to steer clear of that in street cars, and that's, I don't know if anyone, you know, doesn't know that background, but I just want to kind of fill some people in that might be ignorant to that fact.
When I see those, they scare the hell out of me when I see those.
Yeah.
And I see people cruising and, you know, like usually they'll have a bucket seat that's a bit lower than a factory seat, but the distance between the bar and your head, it's gonna get filled in quick if you get in an accident.
Correct.
And,
yeah, no,
you can drive, be driving, you know, like a grandma, but it's the next guy you also have to worry about as well. So
exactly. That's what I'm thinking
of. But yeah, that for me personally, I wouldn't put one of those on the street. You know, like I said, drivability is a big thing for me, because I don't want to be the guy like stalling at every stoplight because your clutch is just so heavy, you know, and the car under, you know, let's say under 5,000 RPM, it's just a, you know, complete mess, which you'll see a lot with like a drag bar, especially in like in the Honda world, right? If you have an insane drag build, and even if it's tuned well, if you've got a big turbo on it, it's hard to sort of like manipulate the throttle and right. be drive like a normal person.
Yep.
When you want to rip on it, it's great. But before that, that's it. So that's my opinion for me. My Civic, I have a Civic hatchback that is, it's stripped down and it has plastic rear windows and it's got bucket seats, but they're adjustable. Of course, no creature comforts. So that for me is pretty much the limit. I'm not going beyond that. It has a roll bar, not a roll cage. Yeah, that's about as far as I would go.
I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, I think a lot of people have that definition pretty similar. I just love the street outlaw aspect of it where,
sure.
yeah. you know, we're talking a full big tire car with a full tub mm-hmm. and they roll it out the back of a trailer, but it's a street car. I always love that aspect. It's always been a thing. I'm surprised that you have the plastic windows because I was actually going to bring up, like, if you have a Lexan windshield and side windows at that point, are we still considering a street car?
Like windshield?
I've seen them. You just have the rear, but I'm saying I've seen guys come down and say it's a full on street car and you're talking all Lexan or plastic windows, Lexan windows, whatever you want to call it, full plastic windows and a freaking net essentially holding the car in and they consider that a street car. And I don't see how that's possible.
For me, I don't. And then also, the seats that have like the head part that goes all the way around for mm-hmm. your humble hit.
Yep.
Those I think are also awful for the street because it's such a blocker of view. You can't see, completely. You've got to kind of duck under. In my opinion, those are just not a good idea. But
aren't a lot of those designed also to support like the Hans devices more so than just standard seat setup too?
Yeah, and then it comes on the side, so your helmet can bounce off of it. But for the street, it just seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, I could see that.
Visibility-wise,
Yeah, you definitely need to be able to look both ways when getting to the intersection without unobstructed view is kind of important.
Yeah, and with bucket seats, it's already hard enough to like back up out of a spot properly because you got to really turn your whole body, right?
So, actually, in my Z, I have that problem. I'll actually have to drop one side of my harness to be able to like look over my shoulder while I'm backing out because it's such a bad like positioning because I'm like locked in my seat. I'm not moving.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I think you definitely run into those sorts of like little issues if you're using race car parts on the street. But I think what you're alluding to is like really, really hardcore track builds just kind of being driven on the street. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you're not talking about a daily driver, right?
Is like weekend worst. Like I get, daily driver's a daily driver. Like anytime you start pushing power out of that window gets smaller and smaller really quick. No, I mean, just I miss the aspect of being able to go out on like a Friday and Saturday. And you're saying you're seeing it on your end with the Supras and stuff. Maybe I'm just missing it a little bit here, but a lot of guys, a lot of times it's the same recipe. It's a BMW with a big turbo and a tire and that's all you're seeing. And it's great. I mean, it's great to see them out there and seeing them put up really big numbers and these Audis put up big numbers, but these cars they're full on, like they're not daily drivers, but they're not a race car either, if that makes sense. They're that in between level, and you're like, you have a full carbon fiber leather seat in there, full dash, everything. You've got the AC blasting it all the way up to the line, but you're saying it's a race car, and I'm just trying to figure out, is that the new definition of race car? Are we okay with having those creature comforts?
I don't think there's a specific label you can really put on it. It's really based on the individual, right? So what I might think is a track car, Scott might be like, I drive that on Saturday and Sunday. So it's a little bit different for every person. Everyone's interpretation is going to be different. But I think one thing that comes to mind is like, I see a lot of, at that Cars and Coffee in particular, I see a lot of drift cars come through with LS swaps. And the swaps are pretty mellow. The car's got exhaust and an intake and that's about it.
Yeah.
And I have to think like, it makes sense when I see those because it makes the car so much more drivable. Right, they get all the power they want, all the torque they need. They have, two simple mods that aren't going to affect drivability at all. And then the car can be wild, like it's got, it's all stripped down. It's got the bucket seat and the PDM and all that kind of stuff. But the engine part of it, that it's taken care of for them because it's so simple. And I know the LS swaps are pretty played out by most standards. But when I see that, it makes perfect sense to me why you would do that. You don't have to worry about anything. In terms of like complicated turbo piping or wiring or anything, it's just plop that motor in there and then it's going to do what it's supposed to do every single time you turn the key. I don't know, that just came to mind because I see so many of those now, especially at that Cars and Coffee. There's usually like 10 of them.
So, yeah, I mean, and you're right. It makes sense. It's a very easy formula to put something together that has great drivability, but then you still can go out and use it as the race car, the drift car on the weekends and take it to events, but then you can still have a license plate on it. You can still have insurance on it. You can still drive it everywhere. It's no different than driving a Corvette with bolt-ons, for instance, or something along those lines, where you're not so far out the zone of drivability and reliability that the car is usable. And I think that's something that a lot of guys are also missing out on. Like, it's great to have the fastest, GTR or the fastest, F80 or whatever. But at the same time, like, if you're not able to actually get out and enjoy the car and use it, to its fullest potential, I mean, I feel like we're kind of pigeonholing ourselves, I guess would be the best way to term it.
I think you're more of a dual purpose type of guy. Like you would like to have a race car, but you also like to every once in a while go to Cars and Coffee and just hang out for a little bit, maybe drive it to Starbucks or just for fun and then head back home.
Yeah.
100%. I totally understand. But with that said, there's a lot of risks that come with that beyond worrying about that guy that's going to like cut you off or T-bone you or something. There's also the aspect of police presence as well. You have to be careful because you go too far, you draw a lot of attention to yourself, and then you're the one complaining about this mile-long ticket you got for everything from emissions to, at least out here in Southern California, you do have to think about that. The louder visually the vehicle is, the more attention it draws to you. Mm-hmm. And then even if you're driving the way that you should be, legally, speed limit, you're not being, an a-hole, you can still get targeted because
it attracts attention.
You're an easy target, right? Yeah. So that's certainly something you have to think about. I don't know if it's as bad where you are, but over here, those are just like,
It can be. It kind of depends on where you are. Long Island's very good at having different rules depending on which town you're in within the counties. Mm-hmm. So, if you're in like certain neighborhoods, it's going to attract all the wrong attention. And there's a very large possibility you'll get stopped. And then in other areas, you're just, a pedestrian driving around, another person just driving around. Is there a point where you think that you personally will get to that level where you don't even want that one that doesn't have the creature comforts? Like, you're going to demand AC, power steering, and all those things out of that car. Like, is there ever that point where it's like, I'm done with that aspect of the culture and I want to move on to having something that is 100% reliable daily? When is that change ever going to happen? Or you always think that you're going to have your little hot rod and then have your other projects?
It's an interesting point, just because I think that I'm fortunate that I do have I own a couple of cars, so I was able to to get them really cheap because I'm a very cheap person. So I got them when they were dirt cheap, and then poured way too much time and money into them. But I do have, like I said, the Civic hatchback that is right on the edge. I wouldn't go any further in terms of going more toward a track car. It's like right at the edge right there, and that one. I drive it maybe every other weekend, and I'll take it out for an hour or so. That's about all I can take. And then I'm like, I'm good. Like, I get my fix more or less. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It rips. I love that car and it rips. I love it. But after about an hour or so, I'm like, I'm good. I'm good. Like, there's no creature comforts at all. Everything's on a switch panel, even the blinkers, everything's on a switch panel. So, it's very, very raw. And I like that for a little bit. And then I'm good. If I do go to Cars and Coffee, which is rare, I'll be out for, 2 or 3 hours and then I'll head home. on one of my other cars, it has full interior. It's a very mild turbo setup. It's got a stereo, it's got power windows and stuff like that. So that one is kind of like my, that one I can sit in for a lot longer, so I'll take a trip to San Diego, and I'll be out, most of the day and just have fun with it. And that's cool. I think for some people, if they just have one project car, they got to make that decision kind of early on. Like, what do you want to do? Because you can go too far. We talked about it before many times, you and I and Scott and I, that you can go too far and then sort of regret those decisions you made because it's too much of this or that. Maybe it's too much power, or it's you're breaking stuff left and right, or it's just not daily drivable anymore, if that's your goal.
So I have a
So you
funny
do have to
story
map it
about
out.
that. I actually have something really funny. So about taking cars way too far. So when I first got my Z, I was like, I'm going to make this into a track car eventually. That's what this is going to be. And I started pulling out, I pulled out my carpet, pulled out the back, all the panels, toss it all away, being dumb. Turn around, I don't know, less than 10 years later, I have now bought new carpet, all my interior panels, re-put everything back in. So I am just as bad as I'm sure some of us on the pod or some of us in the comments would be. We've all been there where it's like you make this brash decision, you're like, oh, I'm gonna do this. This is what I'm gonna do. And then all of a sudden you're having to walk back those decisions and you're spending money twice. So
Well, I mean that's part of it, right? That's part of the process is learning from your mistakes, like anything else. But in the car world, nowadays especially, you're fortunate enough to have all of this information at your fingertips, right? Like through social media, through websites, through even through old forums, you can search back through. You can sort of like map your path without making a lot of financial mistakes if you want. But I think a lot of times people know that. And they still move forward anyways because they want to get the feel of it. Like, but what if I did this big single turbo setup? Like, what if? How's it going to feel? And then they do it. And they're like, damn, this is amazing. And then they might run into a roadblock later on, or they start breaking parts. Like, and
What
that
happens
turns
when you go
into,
up 3 more pounds of boost?
exactly. And so it's one of those things that, like, I think it comes with experience. If you've been doing it for a long time, you sort of know better. You might not make the best decision because you could kind of get, I don't know, you kind of get maybe a little bit, you go a little bit overboard at times. But I think if you're a newer builder and you're just coming into this, you want to do it all. You want to have the appearance, you want to have the horsepower, the torque, you want to have it all. But you sort of have to like manage your expectations and then also, watch your pocketbook as well, because as you can get in over your head.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm always in over my head. That's the fun part I think
Yes.
about building. I think
Ramen
that
for lunch
happened.
again? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the ramen for lunch again. Yeah, that's been the MO. But the I definitely think that we've kind of covered like what kind of goes into this. I mean, I really still find it magical to see some of these really cool cars that were actual race cars. Like, I don't know if you had a chance to see like their there was a post recently of one of the old GTM Mustangs that the saline ones that they raced over at like Lugana Seca. And the guy actually has a streetable, I guess it's like a transport plate or whatever. So he was actually ripping it up and down around the shop. And the thing just, it's amazing to see. I mean, you got to understand these cars were never really seen driving around on a street. And then when they're on there, they look menacing. Like they honestly, it's something out of place that just makes me feel, makes me feel excited to see that aspect of
Yeah, and
the car community.
I think what you see around you can also influence it, right? Because like in the area that I live in, and like with taking the kids to school and stuff like that, there are some homes, not my home, but there are some homes here that are like really really big, and these guys have a lot of money. So it's I see like Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and McLarens on the regular, like it's all the time. So when I go to Cars and Coffee down the way, and then get out there, there's a whole row of them. Everyone's freaking out over them. I'm just kind of like, oh, it's cool. It's nice. It's cool, but it doesn't really do anything for me because I see it all the time now. I see these guys cruising their cars around. But then if something like an F40 comes out, like you never see those, right? So that I was just like, whoa, I'm blown away.
I
So
hate to say it.
I
I
was.
feel like the F40 has become the YouTube car of 2025 now.
Yeah,
I feel like we're
for
seeing
sure.
it everywhere. We went from seeing like one or two examples of it, and now it's I can't open YouTube without seeing it.
Right. Now there's like guys that are like painting them and doing all this
Oh
stuff.
yeah.
But for me personally, when I see those things, I take a second look. I just think I've only seen maybe three my entire life in person. I just think, I don't know, that's just one of my favorites, just to see it and pore over it. But then I'm also a weirdo. Like I see an NSX and I'm like, damn, I never see these on the road. So I'll sit there, I'll kind of go through it. And for people that have actually driven one, it's a fancy Accord, really. But it's just the fact that it's the NSX, like all the engineering has just
Fa
gone into it.
fancy backwards Accord.
Yeah, but you, if you sit in it, there, it's so familiar 90s Honda. But
Oh yeah, no, it's got they are 100% a 90s car, or a 90s Honda. Yeah. Like they smell like it, they feel like it. Every touch is that period. Like it's a little more refined, just a tiny bit. I would say it's more Acura than Honda, but you know, it's still a little nicer.
But it's like when I see one of those, since I rarely see them, you know, I'll take the time to kind of go through it, especially at Cars and Coffee. Whether it's modified or not, I just want to check it out, you know, because there's not many of them around, it seems like. So
isn't that funny that sometimes, like, you know, the hypercars and supercars aren't those cars that we gravitate towards necessarily. I mean, the layman, guys, you know, car people tend to be like, you know, oh, look at this really cool four-door car over here that we're all staring at and nobody understands why. And it's just because it's something that is unique to us as a culture.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's people that will find out that I like, you know, like the guys I play soccer with, they'll be like, hey, you go to Cars and Coffee? You know, I think I saw you there or whatever. And they'll be like, did you see that, you know, you see that Lamborghini that was there? I'm like, yeah, I saw it. It's cool. Like, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really do it for me just because I see them all the time now, especially in this area. You know, they're all, you know, kind of by the beach and everything. So it doesn't really thrill me too much.
Well, hopefully you get some good pictures at the next Cars and Coffee when the spring starts up, and we can reminisce about some cool NSXs that you see there versus the Lambos.
Yes.
But I mean, I guess that kind of sums up where you kind of fall on where the street car race car line is driven. Go figure. Where the race car and street car line is kind of defined.
Yeah, at least for me. I'm sure people watching probably have a different view, so maybe they can comment and let us know kind of what side they fall on.
Yeah, definitely
with their own builds, because some people, you know, they go wild, man. They'll go all out. They don't.
I mean,
they'll
that's actually the best part.
Front window and you know all that stuff.
That's got to be the best part about doing a lot of the comments on the YouTube stuff. Is I get to hear from so many different people in our community with all their different projects. So please, guys, I mean, I'm a diehard car guy. So please put everything down in the comments, send it in, tell us what you're doing, what projects you're doing. And, you know, I love to hear it.
So. Well, man, that's it. We'll see you on the next one.
See you on the next one, guys. Take care. Peace.